coming up.
I speak to my clients, you know, some clients who train really hard. Sometimes you find that you'd look a bit of semen.
What?
Bro, okay, it sounds crazy.
I knocked out my opponent for 9 minutes.
Yeah.
I got a fright, I was shaking, I was thinking if this guy dies, I'm going to jail.
I saw a young man, 19 years old, who came into the center with what we call paraphimosis, right? It happens in men who are uncircumcised. Okay. The foreskin comes back and it doesn't go back over the head of the penis again.
If I eat, like now, right, and then after 5 hours and I don't eat, I start having headaches, severe headaches.
Did a liver biopsy and the test came back that I had hepatitis autoimmune disease. It's when your immune system fights your, it fought my liver as if it does not belong there.
I wasn't actually a victim to the substance.
When you are a street dweller, you suffer a lot of things. And one of the greatest things that you suffer is rejection. Some people go away, pathetic, useless piece of garbage. Things you speak vocally have a deeper ripple effect than actual physical abuse. Did you realize that?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. 6 South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive healthcare. Today is a very bittersweet day. It's our season finale. We've been here at The Real Network for almost a year. And although our journey for now has come to an end, we look back on the incredible memories that we've created here in the studio. Good times, yeah. The good times we shared, the highs and the lows, listening to people's sad stories, listening to people's happy, motivational, inspiring stories, and obviously talking medicine.
Yeah, educating.
Now, I think this episode will be a bit of a dedication to our journey here. We'll talk about the experiences that we've had, the lovely guests that we've shared, and maybe give you a little bit of insight into who we are. I don't think we ever actually discussed that. So before we get into like the topics, I know we are somewhat parting ways. For those of you who are quite avid fans of the show, Brendan has been away, taken some time off. You can tell us why.
I was actually wondering, like, I don't even get a welcome back.
Something like that. Welcome back, Brendan, for the finale.
Yeah, no, but I mean, obviously I've been in communication with you guys. So I just thought, at the time when I left the podcast, just to take, you know, like some time off away from social media and so forth. And now when I'm ready to come back full force, all of a sudden the podcast is coming to an end.
Unfortunately, yeah.
So yeah. It's like, just at the time when I'm ready to come back, we got the bad news that this is going to be the final episode.
For now. I think our fans and our audience should pay attention very closely to our social media and to the channel.
Yeah.
We'll be making some announcements and hopefully we'll get back and we'll come back stronger and we'll figure out a way to make this sustainable in the long term. But I mean, we have been here for a year.
And
it's crazy because we started this podcast initially just to market a online men's health clinic, which has grown from strength to strength because of everyone's support and sharing the videos, etc. And now I think the podcast was a place for us to come and meet
and
on a regular basis, get to interact with guests and people that we'd never ever meet in our life, cross paths with. Some of the more famous guests like Danny van Heerden, who was a
power
slap champion. Mm. We have an EFC MMA welterweight champion that was on the show. We've had musicians, singers. We've had a lot of people.
We even have a street dweller.
A street dweller.
Who is going to be fighting another street dweller.
Yes, yes, yes. Bonga was on the show.
Bonga versus Alostro. What is now?
It's crazy. I think that people are doing anything they can to promote fights, boxing matches now.
Yeah.
Making them a lot of money.
Anything.
No, man, it's, yeah, I mean, thanks again, Suhail, for just sharing. You can see, I mean, the mood is a bit down.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, rightfully said, this is definitely not the end. But yeah, to think, you know, a year of hard work, a year of sharing experiences and growing, you know, the brand, our brand, and just being part of this beautiful family, the Real Network. And I mean, we're forever grateful for being part of this family. But yeah, like everything that's good, it eventually comes to an end.
No, it really is beautiful. I think just to give some insight, like we met, you know, 15 years ago. And I think it's probably about time, you know, life for me has changed and I'm actually moving cities. I'm going to be moving to Cape Town.
He's the reason why we have to shut down.
Partly, don't blame me, guys. yeah, so I'm moving and for hopefully, you know, putting my trust and faith in God and putting my best step forward to try and progress my career, taking a risk, leaving my comfort zone, leaving my friends. And that's something that I'm really going to be finding difficult when I'm out there. But I know that I'll always have these guys around me, and we'll always cherish the memories that we've created together.
Yeah.
You know, come what may. And yeah, I think, you know what? Let's tell the people how we met. You know, we were all at Rez together, and we all used to sit at the dining hall and sit and eat. And, you know, we actually sat together and we said, we're going to start a business together.
Yeah.
We're going to start a clinic together. And look at us today. If you pay very careful attention, I'm the only one that's not wearing a hoodie.
Yeah, I'm wearing your hoodie.
Because Nhlanhla is wearing mine. Because he didn't bring his scrub top. Yeah, man. Like, what a crazy world that we live in.
Yeah.
Like, what a life that we have shared together.
You know, something you guys probably don't know is that what you're saying is very true, that it started slowly when you said we're going to start a business together. But it's as if I can remember the day. Obviously, I don't remember the day, but I always knew that the friends that I'm going to keep after I'm finished at medical school is going to be the friends that we're not sitting around the table and talking about women only, about chicks and things like that. You know, when you're young in your early 20s, that's all you talk about. But as you grow, I realize that the conversations are changing, you know. You suddenly talk about business, guys are now having serious girlfriends. You know, you look at Nhlanhla, now he's dating. You know, he's now dating seriously.
You're like, we're talking med school.
No, med school. Just a marriage.
Yeah, you see. Yeah. But when it's like, for example, when you started dating at med school, you're like, yo, what has the world come to? Even Nhlanhla is now getting serious, you know. But as the years went, I realized that these are the friends that I'm going to, you know, that are going to be true friends. Because, yes, we have friends, but there's only a certain number of people that you can say these have become my brothers, you know.
Yeah.
And the group of friends that you guys are with Vish and with Suleiman, who no one has ever seen or knows,
was always with us,
you know, has been that core of mine that we now speak about serious things in life, and we support each other's careers, we support each other's families, and we only support each other's faiths. And, you know, even though we come from different faiths, we support each other even in that aspect. And I think that's what's been important and why this podcast actually thrived. And I do think there's a space and a need for this type of podcast in South Africa.
Yeah.
A medical podcast. We were speaking about AI and ChatGPT earlier on, and how anyone can just Google or ChatGPT a medical question, you know. But it's not like that, you know. Someone would come to me in the casualty or at the clinic and say, and tell me something that ChatGPT told them. And then I just smile. I'm like, it's not like that. Let me explain to you actually what it is, you know. So there's definitely a need for this type of podcast in the country. I know we are also live there on Instagram. I don't know if anyone is, you know, listening.
Yes, you've been quiet, man. You seem like you're more emotional than we are.
Now, the stories of the dining hall chats were like, we hit hard. Because I remember those times where we used to sit in the dining hall. And
yeah, because we had raised. So just for those who don't know, like we all eat communally every day together.
And we used to run to get to the dining hall.
Yeah.
You think to yourself, I don't want to miss that joke in Plant
Success. Yeah.
And when I'm there and I'm right there, I'll see Suhail running on the stairs. Bah, bah, bah. You see him running.
He wants to also come.
He wants to also come fast. And you feel like, I don't want to miss that meeting. I think this podcast was sort of an extension of that.
This is
our dining hall chats.
Yeah.
It felt like that, yeah.
No, but I feel sometimes when I know how you guys are supposed to answer to something that I've said, but then on the podcast, you just sit with straight faces. I'm like, guys, come on.
This is not how these guys would have answered this question.
I know how you would respond to this question, but now you sit
here. You know, we also have to be politically correct. We're
professional
also professionals.
As well, yeah.
So it's not just about, your opinion, but the message you're also sending.
Yes, of course.
So which episode, Sale, would you say was highlight for you?
Like, what was our first episode?
I almost got slapped by the world's second hardest slapper. That for me, like meeting the guy, shaking his hand, seeing that he's like a part of history, that for me was probably one of the highlights of the show. Let's go around and then I'll tell you something.
For me, actually, now that I think about it, one of the biggest ones, I remember when I was second year intern and at Telemukheran, I once went to visit Sidi at the Constitutional Court.
Mm.
And I think that's when I saw Judge Cameron.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, there was like a case, I remember it was about like traditional healers trying to get rights. I can't remember what it was about, but he was there. And to see someone who's admired and someone with so much wisdom and so much there's so much with Judge Cameron, and we had him right here with us making jokes and just telling us about his life
and his journey through HIV.
So basically we brought him to the dining hall. This should have actually been the dining hall chat.
Next season when we change the set, dining hall in the back,
dining hall chats.
I think the purpose of the podcast was supposed to teach, to explain medical concepts in a simple way, right? Mm. So my favorite episode was the episode with the endocrinologist.
Oh, yes, with the endocrinologist,
So I think that one, we went deep into endocrinology. So
I think that was a really nice one,
Maybe in the future, we'll just go through different specialties and explain simple things,
And try and get to the most specialized person in that field to explain, some of the simple things.
I don't think I have one specific guest, but we had a few guests who were on who spoke a lot about how they deal with life, how they get through life, and how they've been through challenges past in their lives, and how their past difficulties, struggles have now, helped them approach life. I'm thinking of that guy, I forget his name now, but the one who was an alcoholic and had almost killed himself many times. Ofense, who was the bodybuilder, also had, good philosophies, on how to navigate life. The lady who was talking about howling at the moon and all of those things, I forgot. Remember that lady? The trauma counselor or something like that.
Oh, yes. And she actually went and she was living with a family in a village in Mpumalanga.
All people, so that's what really stuck with me throughout our podcast, was just hearing from different people and how things that have affected them throughout their lives and how they
maybe we have
grow
plastic
from that.
Surgeons here. We've had
with body
endocrinologists. What other medical specialties?
Urologists we've had. Upcoming ophthalmologists we've had.
Upcoming ophthalmologists, urologists.
Pediatrician.
We've had a pediatrician, Kanya.
Yeah.
Kanyile,
yeah. Yeah.
She was supposed to be part of the podcast, right?
Yeah. And look, I mean, it's only goodbye for now.
Yeah.
We don't know what the future holds, and it could look brighter and better for everyone. So I think we shouldn't be too pessimistic. We must look forward to whatever is coming to come in the future.
No, definitely. Of course, for sure, man, for sure.
And maybe the guys in the comments can tell us what they want to see in the future.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, tell more us. Interactive. Maybe we should do the whole thing on Instagram Live. Maybe we should do it like YouTube Live, and then we have comments, questions answered there. Let's see.
Yeah. So
but I think another thing that, you know, sometimes saddened me about, not really saddened me, but like I feel I personally never fulfilled, was, you know, I never felt like people really understood the purpose of Gents Clinic, you know, and I felt like we could have also
better make this a reel.
We could have also just spent more time, especially getting people, because, I mean, the reason why we even decided to start a clinic is because, I mean, there were certain things that we were experiencing or seeing in our jobs, you know, especially as junior doctors, that we felt we weren't taught well, and that they actually really mattered to men. And I felt like initially, you know, initially when we started the podcast, that was our primary goal, you know, focused on that. And then we kind of, tried to include everything else. But hopefully next season, that's also going to be part of what we do, and just being gents and empowering other gents.
No, for sure. I think that's, apart from just the podcast, it's just really, it has been really beautiful growing in the business, because listening to you, to men share their life, and, you know, we all go through similar experiences as men. And it's just beautiful to hear from a man, you know, hey, we're going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. And when we can actually help them, and we do see the results, and we see them continuously coming back to us, it really, it shows that the business has purpose behind it. Mm. We're not just a business that is out there solely to make money, but we're also there to actually help people, which is the point of private healthcare. Is that we want to provide a good quality service for men by men. And now and then we're helping women too. You know, when we help a man with premature ejaculation by giving him scream cream so that his partner can reach orgasm before he does, that's empowering for women too.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes a woman consult with us on the in the consultation and give us more insight into the problem that's happening.
I've even been I was with Nasim when he started consulting a patient, and then he left and he came back to me and told me that that was the wife of the guy laying out the issue from her perspective, you know. And then he met with the guy, you know, like later after that, with the husband. So, yeah, man. I think actually going back, like you say, going back to what our original purpose was, I think that's where where we can take off from when we come back again.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, what did we learn? We learned how to become public speakers. I think we learned how to navigate on a major network and work together with a beautiful team. Yeah. Let's give a round of applause for Senna.
Yeah, man.
And Juan Dile and everyone else, Biwe and the rest of the crew.
Everyone at the back.
New and old.
These guys would like stay up at night, 10 p.m. recording.
Yeah.
Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Saturday morning. I'll never forget when we first started, we used to come in here on a Saturday morning record. And the team was so dedicated. They were like, it's fine. We'll do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's been a very difficult, rough year in more ways than one for all of us. The healthcare system in South Africa is undergoing a lot of difficulties, a lot of changes that affects medical doctors, that's obviously affected our, you know, our patient care, affected doctors' quality of life. Doctors are finding it difficult to find work. Jobs are scarce. Posts are not easy to come by. And so for us to have this out, you know, platform and walk in the corridors and people are like, hey, you're the guys from that podcast.
How's
that podcast going? You know, you feel a sense of like, we actually did something. You know, we've done something that most people in their lives won't even dream of doing. Starting a business with their friends, which a lot of people are like, hey, don't do business with your friends.
It's not a good idea.
It's not a good idea. I think it's been an incredible journey. I think it's been a good journey. I think, you know, as friends, we've managed to run a business and then a podcast together with a beautiful team, and created an impact even amongst our colleagues who are now watching our podcast and saying, hey, I like what you guys have done.
Exactly. And who would love to do something similar, you know, for their own sort of you know, disciplines and their target patients. So we've inspired a lot. We wish to inspire a lot. We also get inspired a lot. But yeah, man. Yeah, I think, Sena, do you have some stuff for us?
Yeah, Dudula. So let's talk about a few issues before we go. Currently, Operation Dudula is in full force amongst our primary healthcare, in the primary healthcare
largely
sector.
Largely the primary healthcare.
And we find that there's polarizing views. So let's go around the room. For those of you who don't know, Operation Dudula is a movement to remove illegal foreign nationals from obtaining access to healthcare. And their belief is that it puts a major strain on the healthcare system at large and healthcare professionals, and it limits care for South Africans who require it. Brennan, what do you think? As somebody who's technically a sub-specialist in primary healthcare.
Yeah. Look, if you look at it from a constitutional point of view, what Dudula is doing is not, they're not against the constitution. From the constitutional point of view, those people who are accessing the primary health care, they're allowed to access that primary health care. That's why they're there in the first place. That's why they've been in our primary health care system all the years, right? The problem comes, so they're allowed to access our care. The problem comes in now with is the frustration that all South Africans have, is that our healthcare system is being burdened, you know, is already burdened. And if you are frustrated, a South African who's frustrated with our leaders and the way that they run the system and how home affairs is, you know, so inadequate, and how porous our borders are and the bribery and things that allegedly go on at the border, then you become frustrated and you need to go the way that Dudula is going. Because how else are you going to, how else will things change, you know, if our government continuously enables there being so many illegal foreigners in the country? Sure. So that's it from my perspective. And I'd be interested if we could actually see what the real numbers, I don't think you'll ever get the real numbers, but what are the numbers of people who are accessing our healthcare system? From you, Ness, anecdotally, how do you see the numbers of illegals in the primary healthcare system?
The thing is, it depends which way you go, which clinic it is, right? So we're talking about primary healthcare, it's clinics, right?
Yeah.
And also you need to know, who are you talking about? Are you saying illegal people? Or people who are just foreigners, right? So you can have people who are here legally, but they're not South African. So if you're saying you have a problem with the illegal people, obviously, look, the Constitution says that everybody in South Africa should get free healthcare.
I mean, primary healthcare. Yeah.
Right? So that by the Constitution, then you can say, okay, illegal people should get it as well, right? But then that's what the problem. If you're waiting, if you're a patient, and if you go yourself to the clinic, the thing is, most people who say that, no, everybody should get primary healthcare in South Africa are those who go to private healthcare. They have no problem with that. But if you go into to government healthcare, then you're going to see yourself, for you and your family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's when you start to feel it, where your frustration starts to hit your heart. You say, but what's going on? This line is going around the block, around the clinic. There are so many people here.
Mm.
Half of them are not even South African. What should I feel, right? Obviously, you're going to start to have those Dudula mindset, right? But like, the thing is, we need to all agree as a country and say, what are we doing, right? Are we all saying, the constitution says that illegal people can come in. Should we, where is the line? Should we say that only South African people who are South African citizens should get it? Or people who are here legally, or people, everybody, right?
Mm.
And we should all say what that is. And we don't know actually the numbers. You can't say that we have no idea what the percentage of people are, right? And then there's also this thing that's going around saying that like there's 11% or something of South African people who are just undocumented. They're born in South Africa, but they don't have an ID or don't have any documentation. So it's like to say that those people, or are you also taking those few million people to not allow them to get healthcare, right? Mm. So where's the line? Where are we drawing it? And what are we all deciding on? Because you need to yourself go to a clinic and then you're going to see for yourself how many foreigners there are. Then you can actually know what's going on. What do you think?
Mm. What do you think?
I think, I mean, we spoke about this a bit earlier. My view is, I mean, how are they illegal and, you know, sitting in your neighborhood in the first place, you know? The big problem is not them going to a clinic and you being frustrated that your line is long with illegal people. Or illegal foreigners or whoever's there. I think the problem or frustration should actually be addressed at our leaders, at our porous borders, and all that mismanagement and corruption that's happening there.
Mm.
And those are the people we should actually be fighting and mourning, you know?
Mm.
Because all these people that we now frustrated with, I mean, and most of these people are really struggling people. You know, these are not...
Yeah, of course.
They're not, you know, someone who just left their country because, you know, they just felt like they wanted a taste of Santin.
Yeah.
No, this is someone who probably left a war zone. Someone who left, you know, poverty, drought, yeah. Serious poverty. You know, people that are working ridiculous hours for money that a South African would never dream of even touching or working for, you know. So to say, you know, go attack those people, I think is really weak.
Yeah.
I think we should just misdirect. Dudula should be duduling politicians, man. That's my
thing. Yes, yes, yes.
Dudula, duduza.
Do you think that this mindset, I don't know if anyone has experienced it, but do you think with colleagues, do you think this mindset or this frustration hits doctors as well to a point that... when you see an illegal foreigner, we would know because when you get the file, there's no details there about who they are, what. So you can see that this is a foreigner and likely illegal. Do you think it impacts doctors to feel like, hey, I'm not going to treat this guy the best that I should?
No way.
And we shouldn't, yeah.
I've never seen it, and I don't think it ever happens that a doctor would actually bias a patient to like to say that no, this patient I'm not going to treat them well or something like that.
Yeah.
There's no way that happens.
I mean there's very rare cases, but
seriously,
no, but like,
not even
just
one.
Think of yourself, Bri. You are working in this overcrowded clinic. It's full, you know, our clinics. And then you get this patient, you know, for mere fact, the fact that they don't have documentation, they didn't pay to be there. And majority of the time, obviously, there's language problems, they're screaming, you know.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, your frustration levels become high. And I think subconsciously, you don't provide that person, you know, the best quality of care you would have given someone who spoke like you, for example, with a similar problem, with the same laceration or whatever. And I think sometimes we just, you know, run away from
those
So
this,
those
this
things.
Is the reality that I'm talking about of what Nhlanhla's speaking about now.
But I know for a fact I've had those thoughts, like especially in Obs and Gyn, where you see a mom who's pregnant, and I mean routinely you have to go around, you know, checking the dilatation and whatever. It does affect how you do it. It does affect, you know, who you talk to.
I've experienced it, not from other doctors, but when I'm working alone, and even the security guards who are standing nearby, and they throwing their comments about foreigner, query, whatever it is. And maybe, let's say, for example, the patient's not really cooperating with what you want. And then the nurse is throwing in their two cents about Zimbabwe, about Mozambique, and things like that while I'm working there, you know. And in my head, I'm actually frustrated with them because there's something serious happening here. And this person can hear what's being said, you know, and they're already in such a vulnerable state. they're illegal, so they're scared to even have come there. And then they don't know what care they're going to get. On top of that, they're hearing about Zimbabwe and things like that, you know, while they hear in front of me. So I've experienced it, not personally. I've never had those thoughts or feelings or whatever. Perhaps I can say when I walk in and I see the crew snaking, and then I think, yeah, I'm going to be here the whole day now, nonstop, you know. And then I just think to myself, ish, I wish Home Affairs can come here and half this.
Just to do like this whole situation.
Just half this queue, you know. But that's, I think that's as far as what my thoughts on that point would be.
Yeah,
but
it
is a reality. Let's not run away from it and say, no, we are holier than thou as doctors and we only just stick to hypocritical.
Okay, but look at those. Have you seen those obstetric violence cases, right? Mm. Where staff will literally assault patients.
Yeah. And it's documented. That thing happens.
It happens, right? So documented cases.
So go in depth. Give us an example.
So imagine your call. You're a nurse, right? Your call is busy. You're like, women are giving birth, right? So you're working in an MOU, and there's so many women giving birth at the same time. Then you have this foreign patient, let's say, or like just any patient, basically a patient who is about to give birth, and now she's not cooperative, right?
Mm.
She wants to get off the bed and give birth on the floor.
Mm.
She wants to do strange things. She wants to do, like, you know, she's screaming and not getting out of the way, changing and doing some kind of stuff. You're going to be frustrated. You're trying to say things, and there's a proper language barrier, right? So what happens is that the nurses will assault these patients, right?
Mm.
And obviously this is the most vulnerable time that they're in, right? The giving birth. Mm. So these cases are documented, and that's what they will call it, like, would you call it xenophobia? Would you call it something like that? It's not. It's not just a situation.
I think he points out something very important. Have you never, especially in settings where as doctors you sit in one sort of, you know, sort of like open space, open area consultation, have you never overheard a colleague of yours talk to a patient, foreigner, not foreigner, you know, just maybe someone who speaks a different language or looks different to them, in a way where you think you would never even speak to, like, a child that's you know, of your particular race in that manner, like and scream and just, I mean, I've had that even myself. Even this morning, you know, where you're driving to work and you think, was that really the best way, you know, I could have sort of, you know, even sometimes, you know, I at the end of that discussion with myself, I'll say, but did you do the right thing for the person? Yes, I did the right thing. But were you, you know, were you kind? Were you empathetic with their problem? Were you courteous? You know, did you?
Yeah.
Because those things matter. I mean, no one wakes up at odd hours to come and look at you and you know, admire your nice degree or whatever. You know, they're really in pain. They really, you know, did I have to ask you why at this time of the night? Or, you know, did I have to
ask you, you know, why do you come drinking? At 1 a.m.?
You understand? You know, those are my frustrations.
Why are you drinking alcohol?
And wait, I go out at 1 a.m. as a clown. I do these things. How am I now asking you?
Yes.
And when do you guys sleep? What's the problem with you people? I understand. So I think sometimes we also just, you know, try to be politically correct. But we're all doing this. I can tell you today, I was listening to a colleague and just thinking to myself, there is no way you would address anyone like that.
Yeah.
Like,
was it, were they addressing a foreigner?
No, just a granny. Like, you know, South granny, African. you know, in a place where people can't really see well, you know, they're bound to just knock on things, you know. Hey, come here, you.
I hate that. But
also, of course, you didn't have to. You could have literally just said,
yeah,
you know, Gogo, you're next, or Mkulu, you're next. Or,
not to say, you, come here.
But, you know, it's like you're saying, it's the frustration of the time. I'm sure it's not, you know, something that person deeply thought about, to say, you know, now I want to address this Gogo in this way. Mm. They're just frustrated. They're trying to get through the queue, and they just feel like you're not being easy to carry.
It's frustration. If there's a language barrier and the patients are like intoxicated, then and you can't control, then you speak like that.
But guys, let's be honest as well. In my small time experience in private, no one speaks like that to anyone, no matter what they do. Why is it that we take advantage of people who don't have a voice? You know, because let's say there's a language barrier, there's a Zulu speaking granny there. And I'm English speaking from Sandton, right? And just because already before I'm a doctor, with South Africa's history with South Africa's history and racial and cultural and class systems that we've had historically and now, those levels of power exist even before you're a doctor, let's be honest, right?
Mm.
So if I'm English from Sandton and you're already poor and gogo, Zulu speaking, already I'm going to say, you, come sit this side, you know? But you won't do that in private. So else Dossie. Right? So yeah. Why is it that this exists? Why do we speak like that when we in a clinic in Orange Farm versus we in a clinic in Hyde Park?
I think there's a lot of reasons, and I think a big one has to be just, you know, how overworked some people are and how overcrowded
it's frustration. If you're seeing 10 patients a day, you're going to treat each one better. Mm. If you're seeing 30, then you're going to
40
or 50 patients. It's impersonalization. You're now seeing file number, not patient's name. Mm. You're now looking at conditions.
That's true.
This is the patient with hypertension. Not,
I mean, like working in the emergency department, I can't tell you anybody's names. Mm. You know,
yeah.
Mm. I know you by your condition. And I suppose that's the nature of the speciality, but it's also more deeper than that. I think we are so overworked. We don't realize, like, nowhere else in the world, very few countries in the world, work their doctors as hard as they work us.
And it's getting worse in other countries as well. Over time,
yeah,
they're
other countries are catching up to us.
Yeah, other countries are also catching up. Like, we've always known about, you know, the fact that there's going to be long hours, nights, those types of things which we prepare ourselves for. But, you know, the volumes, like, for example, we go on divert. In the last couple of days, we've been going on divert every few hours because we just do not have enough bed space in the wards to admit patients. And therefore, we just cannot, we have no capacity. We don't know what to do with patients in an emergency environment. So how do we intubate patients and put them on ventilators and, you know, get them into emergency surgeries if we just don't have space? What do you say? No, say it.
Too much?
No, say it. You can't hold back now. This is season finale.
Yes,
say what
you're
going to say.
We're leaving you now. We want to hear what you said.
Okay, you'll tell me afterwards. But basically, I think it's, and back to Dudula, it's difficult for us to then fix those problems. Mm. It's very difficult for us as doctors to fix the problems on a national level. Like, illegal immigration is not our fault, but it's there. And then you've got a patient who's suffering and sick. What do you do? Mm. You've got to. Be the sole person in charge of fixing this person.
Mm, mm.
And if you can't do that, what do you do? What do you do? Do you have the right to say no? We can't say no to treating people. So for me, I would say I'm against in some ways of this operation Dudula. At the hospital I currently work at, they do charge patients that are foreigners a fee to open a file. And that obviously deters some patients, but it is very difficult in the emergency department because a clerk that opens a file doesn't always understand the severity of the illness. Mm. And then us as doctors must get involved and try and, like, ask them to open a file, ask them to change their, you know, their ways. Mm. It is a bit difficult. But, I mean, that being said, you know, I think that we have to have both sides fighting about it. You've got to have Operation Tudula, otherwise nothing's going to happen.
But they must also clarify what they're fighting for, right? People say no foreign, no illegals, right? To access our healthcare or primary healthcare.
Mm.
But you must say for what kind of care. If it's just like chronic medication, okay, that's different. But if it's an emergency care, you cannot refuse that. doesn't matter who it is, they have a right for emergency care, yeah. right? Mm. So you can say, what is the difference? Oh, who are you talking about? Is it foreigners or illegals, right? So all of these must be classified. You must say, what are you talking about? And then you must all agree and say, as a country, what are we doing now? Constitution must change, and then we can do that, right?
100%, 100%. Yeah. So, yeah, we've got a few quick topics that we're going to talk about. There's this new super gonorrhea. They're calling it super gonorrhea that's out. That's actually a drug-resistant form of gonorrhea.
Yeah.
So our usual ceftriaxone, which is our
almost go-to. Only, eh? Hmm? There's not anything else other than ceftriaxone than what I'm aware of. No, to treat gonorrhea specific.
Oh, gonorrhea.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
So if ceftriaxone is out...
The study, I think, was conducted in the UK, and they found that people with multiple partners, unprotected intercourse, were suffering with this gonorrhea, and then multiple bouts of recurrence, and unable to treat, going higher doses. And what did they do? So they're currently running studies on certain patients. They're getting them to give them samples, swabs, pus swabs and things like that. Mm. It's really scary.
Yeah.
Mm. I think, sex is obviously a vital part of life. And we always promote safe sex, and sex ideally would within a confined, committed relationship. Preferably a marriage, so that you can prevent these types of things.
That's what I was going to say. I'm not scared. Why are you scared?
No. It's got a cocker infections. I wonder like what the stats look like in South Africa. I'm sure it's
high.
I'm sure it's much higher.
I think STIs are high here, but I don't know about the treatment resistant ones.
Yeah. So, I mean, just thinking about how rife HIV is in this country, and how we always see the most advanced of complications of all these either sexually transmitted infections or whatever, all these infections because of such a poor immune system. I'm sure we've had drug resistant gonococcal infections.
We just don't know.
Just don't know because we treat syndromically,
People don't come
if
back.
Also, like, you can see recurrent STIs. So people will, you see it all the time. Someone will come to you, get treated, then they'll go back and sleep with the same partner again and get it again. So that's the recurrent. But persistent, as in you got treated and then it didn't go away, right? That's a different thing. And then because people have so many partners, they won't know who they got it from. So they'll just be like, okay, it's probably you. I won't sleep with you, but I'll sleep with the other two. But that one is the one that
and
has
no
it.
Condom, man.
No condom.
No condom, all of them.
And how is AI being used to
I mean, they were actually they created a model, AI generated neural network link, where basically they've designed a sort of model of how bacteria replicates over time, and then they've created a model antibiotic to try and counteract these superbugs.
Yeah.
And I think two of the drugs that they found were showing a lot of promise in terms of curing this. But it is very, very new. And I'll be honest, I don't fully understand how that system entirely works. Nas, any ideas?
I think how they normally do it in like a pharmacy, a pharmaceutical company is they'll just try different molecules on a thing, on a bacteria or something. So if you can model it and you can just try it digitally, maybe that makes sense. But these guys will just try random stuff and see what works.
But isn't the whole point of why some of these things become resistant or so difficult to treat the fact that we don't understand how they mutate and
They always mutate.
Because if we understood, then we wouldn't even need anything generating information.
But mutations are random. Random DNA sequence will change, and then randomly will.
So we're saying this model is randomly also generating random sequences.
And I wonder what is, like you're saying, it will be interesting to find out what has caused this resistance. Mm. In the past, we used to use fluoroquinolone, the ciprofloxacin. But that became resistant around early 2010s, 2013, 2014.
To gonorrhea?
Yeah, yeah. Now we use ceftriaxone. We don't use ciprofloxacin as we used to in the past. It already became resistant to ciprofloxacin.
Mm-hmm.
Now ceftriaxone is tracking now, you know. And we're saying that because in South Africa, I'm not sure if the guidelines have changed yet. It's 250 milligrams.
It's 500.
But now it's officially. Yeah, it's 500. And someone above 100 kgs, it's 1 gram. Mm. So we're already increasing the dose to fight it more. Something important that I wanted to bring up is we often associate these infections with burning urine or burning vagina or discharge from the vagina or the penis. But many people are actually asymptomatic.
Especially women.
Also. Especially women. They have no symptoms, no discharge, no burning, nothing. And so now when you go with your partner to take it to the next level, because now you want to go aresosia with no condom, you don't want to use condoms anymore. So you're like, baby, let's go do HIV tests. No, you need to do STI screen as well. Take an early morning urine sample for the man, take a vaginal swab for the woman, and get tested for gonorrhea, chlamydia, you know, and make sure that even though you don't have symptoms, you also don't have these infections.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see?
So what tests can people do? So, like, just to screen. So it's a urine NAT, right?
For yeah, urine STI NAT for men.
Right. Hepatitis?
Oh, okay, HIV, you mean like all
just general tests.
All HIV tests, hepatitis B and C, depending. Some places require hepatitis C. Urine NAT, which is basically just a screen for chlamydia, checks gonorrhea as well. We said HIV test as well. Syphilis. And then a woman, syphilis, of course, herpes. Mm. Because once you have herpes, it's like HIV. You just treat it whenever it flares up, but you'll never get rid of it. And then a woman, you will get a vaginal swab. So basically like those COVID swabs that we used to put down your nose, it just goes in the vagina, take a swab and out again. And then HPV as well, yeah, HPV.
Especially for women.
I saw new research that came out on bacterial vaginosis. No, bacterial vaginosis is the fishy smell that women get. Yeah. It has been said not to be sexually transmitted. Mm. I believe otherwise. Mm. And there's evidence now that shows that the man might be a carrier or he also might get infected. Because traditionally, you wouldn't treat a man for bacterial vaginosis. If he has a discharge, you don't give him metronidazole. No, I'm thinking about trichomonas. You treat a woman for trichomonas. But if the woman has bacterial vaginosis, BV, if a woman has bacterial vaginosis, and the way you know you have BV is the fishy vagina smell. That's where the whole stigma around fish comes from.
Yeah.
So when the vagina has a fishy smell and maybe like a clear discharge that's fishy smelling, especially during and after sex, you would smell it. Now new research is showing that if you treat the man partner, with oral metronidazole and clindamycin topical cream, the recurrence in the female drops.
Mm.
So the woman has a lower chance of getting recurrence. So that, you know, suggests that the man might be a carrier or that a man can also get, you know, can also pass it on to the woman. So that was a nice, that was some nice new...
But obviously not to scare our gents or our ladies on the smell. I think we've had a gynae before discuss smells and and how there's so many players in smell. You know,
there's a lot
diet
of
matters,
impact
type of underwear matters.
I wasn't here for that matters. Episode. Did they say pineapple?
Yeah. You see, if you were there, you wouldn't say this thing of fishy smell. You'd actually know that there's so many aromas that come out of there, depending on the, you know, the time
but
of cycle.
But is it true that pineapple makes it taste nice? Is it true?
No.
Well, she said that it helps. She said that it helps.
Like the taste.
Yeah, but it doesn't taste like pineapple.
But it improves the taste.
It improves the taste. Okay, I don't know what it is about it. Maybe the acidity or something.
Okay.
I've never heard that.
That's always been
but,
the thing.
You know,
pineapple.
Zulu men, you don't taste that thing.
Yeah.
Zulu men, they don't taste that thing.
I don't know.
Yeah. Something that's very important and something that we've meaning to provide, especially to Jens Clinic patients, is a home kit, an STI kit, where they can do all these fancy tests that you just spoke about in the comfort of your home. You don't have to guess now. You don't have to, what's the thing of sliding butt naked?
We had found a supplier that could do the testing, although it is quite pricey, so we're trying to look at solutions for that. But yeah, that's something coming on the horizon.
But the moral of the story is to use a condom.
Why
are men hesitant on condoms, guys?
I've got a whole article.
I think condom-induced erectile dysfunction is
yes, it's true.
The lack of sensation, the pleasure.
Yeah,
it depends. You know, also being in a committed relationship versus not, you feel more comfortable with the partner.
But that lack of sensation can help you to last longer. Mm. So just purely because of that, you can get used to it. Get used to using a condom, last longer, protect yourself. You key.
So.
There's a lot of reasons why people remove this. Brandon has a master's. His whole
master's, he went to
university to specialize, not just be a doc. He specialized in finding out why men remove condoms. Wait, buy them
mid-coitus.
They put it on, they use it, and then decide in between. I don't care about HIV. I don't care about. You know, esophageal, anything, oral thrush, anything that comes with HIV, the cancer.
Condylomata.
I'm going fire for fire now. You see, so... Bree, do you want to touch on some of the things that you found in your master's?
No, it's true that my master's is based on, not exactly this, but why men take off a condom as well. Firstly, I also discovered that a significant proportion of women also take off the condom without the man asking for it or wanting it or anything. So that is a big highlight in my finding. But there's a lot of reasons, and it probably needs a podcast on its own. Mm. But some of the things you are mentioning, there's condom-associated erectile problems. Mm.
Well, Sena is asking, how does it cause it? Just the lack of sensation. Hey? You don't feel as... It takes away the sensation on the glands. And you don't really feel as much pleasure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so without any stimulation, the lack of stimulation causes you...
Something that... Soft. So it's all the things you mentioned. It's lack of... So the biggest predictors of the man is going to take the condom off or refuse to use it is lack of sensation and difficulty to get climaxing, difficulty to get an orgasm. Those are the biggest two. The other one that I argued... You know, it's because, you know, once you become an academic, you can argue your point as well, and you need to prove me wrong. But something that I argue is that men might know that having sex with a condom on is pleasurable. However, they might start thinking about their previous experiences of condomless sex. Mm. And then know that if the condom is off, it's going to be even more key. And even though there's no problem psychophysiologically, that now they start getting now psychological, you know, psychologically they start losing that libido because they're thinking about
C grade.
You're getting a C grade. And you're thinking, I can get A plus. You see. And grade, then now they lose the erection mid-coitus, even though there's no problem. And then they want to take it off now because... of that. That's one of the things I've argued. You need to prove me wrong in future research.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that leads us to our next and I think final question. It's about the declining birth rate in China. So it's been a problem ongoing.
South Africa also.
In South Africa.
We just spoke about how we are overburdened with our healthcare system.
It shouldn't be a problem here.
It's increasing, guys. Huh? Mm.
No, it's decreasing.
The birth rate
is decreasing.
But our poverty rate is increasing, birth rate decreasing.
Yeah. That's weird because normally they go hand in hand.
Yes.
Right? The poorer you are, the more likely you are to have.
But we have a lot of drives, at least in the East Rand, of contception.
Yeah, I'm sure contraception plays a role. But I was listening to a podcast, I just don't remember her name, yesterday. she was speaking about, you know, the importance of also empowering the girl child and the women, especially young women, and how maybe it's now, you know, women feel more empowered to make that decision.
That's Europe's problem.
Yeah, where Europe is also different. And you know, people are, women firstly are deciding to have kids a bit older, that women are being taught, you know, prevention a bit earlier. Mm. And obviously the economics of, you know, having a child and the financial issues. I mean, everything is expensive.
Yeah.
So all of those things are coming together. But I, what I got from what she was saying, which I thought, maybe we're doing something right. Because, you know, we always complaining about how some departments are just women these days. Mm, like, just women.
Yeah.
You know? So maybe that's, you know, maybe those are the big problems that society sort of needs solved, you know, because as a man, you're just thinking, you know, the money, where's the money going?
You know? Exactly. Yeah.
And you forget that's actually that if you empower the mom is not going to take money and go buy a Porsche to impress girls. Eh?
Mom is going to
take that money just to go feed your son, your daughter that you ran away from.
I think it's interesting because, as Brendan said, you know, as the poverty rate rises, unemployment is rising in this country. And at the same time, we've also got the issue of a declining birth rate, which, I mean, for us, as medical professionals, that's not going to be a problem. I also don't think that a declining birth rate bad for society if the society is overburdened?
Maybe in 100 years' time. That's what Elon Musk's fighting. Mm. China instituted this one baby policy back in the 80s or 90s or so.
Yeah.
And that's why it's coming to bite them now. Mm. I think they've done away with that policy long ago, maybe 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, so now apparently they are giving them incentives
to have more children, right?
Which seems weird because, like, surely you wouldn't give them an incentive because before they were taxing them. They're actually taxing them for every extra child they had.
Guys, I'm telling you, if they could give people incentive in SA...
Yeah, let's say not have kids to have
people will resign at work. They'll resign at work. Bye to chow. Yeah, they're making a child. Yeah, 20K is coming.
Some people have even taken the SASSA grant for child as incentive.
No, it's a child support.
That's been proven to be so little.
I mean, 300.
It's false.
And 50 rand.
It doesn't incentivize the child rate in South Africa.
Child grant is.
Plus minus
500.
Yeah.
No, but there's research. There's at least three articles that I've read that have proven that the child support grant, since its inception, does not incentivize women to fall pregnant. Instead, the birth rate has actually steadied or come down after the child grant was institutionalized in South Africa. But it's a common argument. There's a lot of commentators out there who say that the child support grant incentivizes women to fall pregnant, but data shows the opposite.
Yeah, yeah.
I think those are the two biggest ones. You said it's women delaying to have kids. So then also it's people by choice deciding to not have kids because of economics.
Mm. Right?
They call them dinks, double income, no kids, right? They've just by choice. Economically, they can't handle it. They just say no.
But have you not seen, Ness, at work, especially I've seen in primary healthcare, you get a woman and you're speaking to her and you're just doing screening, you know? And then you ask them, so do you want a child? And you know the whole situation at home. You know she's poor, she has no support, nothing. Then you say, yes, funumduana, I want a child. So in my mind, I'm thinking, but how are you wanting a child? Firstly, you are sick from this thing that you're consulting me for today. Yes. You just told me that Gogo's pension gets stolen by your brother who's on Nyaupe. You don't work. It's tough. Your boyfriend is not supportive. But how do you want a child now? Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
But I think that's more of a cultural thing because to be a woman to many people is to be able to bear children and have a child. And a lot of women find a belonging by having a child, I would assume. So, but... Mm. A lot of people don't put the two together, the economic and social, you know, long-term versus not having a child.
But there's a correlation. The higher socioeconomic you are, the less kids you have. The lower you are.
Yes. The more kids you have. Yes, yes. But I'm speaking about the want, the desire for it, you know. So I think the stigma is that if you're poor, you're just having children. They have a desire. I've seen that it's a desire. It's not just I'm having kids because I have nothing to do. It's not that. They do have a desire to have a child.
Yeah. Another person I know is very passionate about that topic who would probably like tell us how we don't know what we're saying. And how he speaks about how, you know, maybe it's because most of us have never been exposed to those kind of environments. That most of these poor people or young people that are having kids are actually not, it's like a, the thing is that her womanhood is her currency, you know, especially the poor woman.
Yes, of course. So
it's not that she wants. Yes, she might desire. I mean, like you're saying, she's a woman. And I think it's like a humanly thing. It's a natural thing. To you know, to want to bear your own, you know, God gave you all these things so that you can make your own, right? But for most of them, bro, like really, just to put a pap and vors on the table, they have to expose themselves to all these old men. They have to, you know, clean some of these old men's places, do all these funny things, and that's how most of them get to so many kids. So maybe they might want one. But after you have one and you realize how tough it is to raise a child, leave the money out. Just being a child or being a young adult and raising someone else is very difficult.
Yeah.
But then when they realize that, yo, you know, now I have this guy who drops off 2,000 every month. Now my Nyaube brother now is, you know, I don't have to care about him abusing Gogo. Yeah, yeah. Now at least I can take some from Sipo, you know. Sipo now shares with Tabo. Now they're both sharing and you're sleeping with both of them. It's a problem. It's tough.
Hey.
Yeah.
That's the realities of our country.
That's the realities of our country. It's a very, very, very sad but hopeful place that we live in. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we all hope for a better future for our country. We hope we can be a part of that better future.
Mm-hmm.
Empower our youth to turn away from such things. I think all of us, at some point in our lives, I can understand the temptation of lust, of greed, of, you know, passion. But, you know, one choice can change your whole life. One mistake can change your entire life. And, yeah, I think on that note, it brings us to the season finale, the final ending of this podcast. I've had an incredibly amazing adventure with these gentlemen here, on and off screen. I'm going to miss them deeply as I venture on to my next journey in life. It's bittersweet, as I said, I think for all of us. But I have faith and I have hope that wherever this journey takes us in business and in this podcast, we're going to make a success out of it.
Yeah.
God willing, we are going to make out of this. I thank all of you for following us on this journey. I thank all of you for like listening and actually just supporting us. For anyone out there that's ever said, hey, you guys are doing something cool. You guys are doing something interesting. You guys are doing something we would never think of.
Yeah.
I think that makes me feel like we've accomplished something. If anything, I think we really have. Tlantla, you have any final words?
I'm very emotional now. But yeah, no, I think I said in the beginning, thank you. Thank you to Sena. Thanks to the team. Thanks to, you know, Gareth and all the people that gave us this opportunity. And I mean, we've learned a lot. You know, you have to come out of your low shell here. But yeah, I mean, we enjoyed, we grew, and yeah, I think to the next finale or to the next season.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that. Yes,
I'm interested to see what you guys write in the comments to tell us what we should do next.
No, I just say watch this space. You're going to see us again. For sure. And hit up Jen's Clinic, jensclinic.co.za. We're still helping South African men throughout the country with various issues about their manhood and being a man and their health. So we're still changing lives, you know. Yeah, we've got a lot of men who are on our programs and are doing great. So if you don't see us on the tube, you'll see us as one of our patients.
Yeah. And can I just mention something before we go? You know, we have so many patients from Cape Town, and we're Joburg-based guys.
Yeah, true.
You know, we represent Joburg. We're just literally, the four of us are Joburg. This is like normal Joburg guys, you know. I don't understand how we attract mainly like so much of a Cape Town population.
Mm.
And I feel like our Joburg guys are really not making use of
for sure.
A lot of the services that we provide. And
hair loss, TRT,
everything. We provide so much.
Western Cape.
STIs, STDs.
So much. Please leave Mpesu, man.
Yeah. Joburg is full of, they want Mpesu, that's the thing.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, so can we have Joburg, you know?
And then finally, hey, look, this season has come to an end, but if there are potential sponsors out there that are interested in partnering with us and taking this podcast to the next level and see genuine potential in what we do and what we are trying to achieve, please reach out to us. You can email us at info@jensclinic.co.za. Contact us. Let us know. We're always keen to partner with people that believe in us. And I hope that someone out there sees the value and the potential in this going forward. And now, for the last time, signing off, my name is Dr. Suhail Essa,
Dr. Ntlantla Vilagazi,
Dr. Nassim Sharif,
Dr. Brendan Matthews.
And we'll see you soon.